Today is January 31st, 2018, and this is episode number 447 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm going to spend my afternoon wrapping up a present. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, head over to Facebook at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine, where we've had several listeners this last week joined us. We appreciate that.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Also awesome, you're wrapping a present. That's so exciting. I can't wait to see what I'm going to get.
I'll keep waiting. It's all for you.
I see how it is. All right, well, that's this week's show. I'm out of here.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
But hey, that'll make the editing a lot easier.
That's true. It will. Yeah. Totally will. All right. So I didn't actually write down our topics.
Okay. Well, do you want me to rattle them all off so everyone knows ahead of time?
Or sure, why not?
Okay.
Yeah, you know, John's been doing that over at Pop.0. It just seems like a really good idea.
You know, anything that John does is clearly a good idea.
Is it really? Is that really a blanket truth? Because I don't think it is.
It's a blanket truth on opposite day.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead, please.
Okay. So, the Department of Justice and SEC investigation into Apple's worn-out battery fix.
Wait, I think I had a different subtitle for that.
What was your subtitle?
The DOJ and the SEC are going to bend Apple over a table
and play cards.
No. Huh? No, they are not.
And reach for the salt?
Not unless they're going to high card it for who goes first.
Keep in mind, no edits.
I'm working it here, but go ahead. What's topic two?
The looming demise of Facebook and Google,
as pronounced by George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
And Apple's coprocessor plans, custom coprocessor plans for new Macs.
I see. That's a good one. All right. Well, let's start with the first, shall we?
Okay.
I'm goofy crazy like that sometimes.
You are. So, oh my gosh, what a surprise. The topic is Department of Justice and SEC went to have a very special relationship with Apple at a table. Did I get that
close. They have announced an investigation. Now, is this along with? Is this a joint investigation
or two investigations?
That's what it sounds like. That's kind of brutal.
Yeah. And here's the deal. Apple says, yes, we're being investigated. And insider sources at DOJ and SEC are saying, yes, the investigation is happening. And the wording has been singular as opposed to plural. But the DOJ and SEC have not come out and said, we are conducting this investigation. So,
yeah, but they normally don't do stuff together. Either way, Apple is going to be hammered over this. Now we've been saying, so what we're talking about is Apple's decision to slow down iPhones with degraded batteries,
mm-hmm.
which the press and Apple haters alike have turned into Apple slowing down old iPhones, which is not at all accurate.
Right. And slowing down old iPhones is not a completely accurate statement or description.
It's not at all accurate.
Right.
It's not even vaguely accurate. It's Apple is slowing down iPhones with degraded batteries, some of which are old, But not all old iPhones have degraded batteries.
And even that's not a completely accurate statement, because it's not slowing down all the time. It's only when processor-intensive tasks happen that would require more voltage than the battery can provide. Only then will you see a slowdown, because that's when a process is going to get broken up over multiple cycles.
Right. And we've been talking about this now for weeks, because it came out a few weeks ago. And our position is that Apple came up with a very, very clever technical solution around a fairly big problem. And that was iPhones shutting down because their batteries couldn't put out enough power mm-hmm. for these peak usages. And it's a very clever solution. And then Apple just screwed the pooch by not telling anybody.
Right.
They didn't tell anybody what they were doing. So that has done, it's combined to do two things. One of which is to confirm all the idiots who said that Apple was deliberately slowing down old iPhones in order to exercise planned obsolescence to make you buy a new iPhone. It's just, which is just stupid.
And false.
And false.
Yeah.
Both. And the second thing that it did is it opened up the company to regulatory scrutiny. There have been multiple class actions filed here in the U.S. There was the French equivalent of a class action. I think there's something going on in England. There's a French criminal probe,
mm-hmm.
although that criminal probe is based on allegations of planned obsolescence, which again is stupid. So, you know, it just drives me nuts. It's so illogical. It just drives me nuts. And now we have the DOJ, Department of Justice here in the United States, and in the SEC doing their own joint investigation. And one of the things that they're investigating is whether or not Apple violated any disclosure laws. So in particular, what the SEC's angle here is going to be whether or not Apple should have told shareholders that they were doing this because of perceived liability. And they're right to investigate this, and they're going to, in my opinion, they're going to be right if they fine Apple or otherwise penalize Apple. Apple screwed up by not telling people what they did.
I agree, they did screw up, and it's one of those things where this is just going to bite them for a long time, because. Yeah. They're going to be dealing with these lawsuits and these government agency investigations, not just from the United States, for quite a while.
Yeah, China's looking into it. You know, any authoritarian regime that wants to stick it to a U.S. company is going to be looking into this. Mm-hmm. Russia is looking into this. Everybody and the brother is going to make whatever kind of mayhem they can, because Apple is, you know, the most valuable company on the planet and has all the money in the world. And mm-hmm. I mean, it just infuriates you. All they had to do was tell us. All they had to do was that they needed to do two things. They needed to A, tell us that they came up with the solution, and B, include indicators in iOS to let people know that their batteries were degraded, and including warranty information as to whether or not it was going to be covered and how much it would cost if it wasn't. So that's all they needed to do. They could have turned this into the biggest feature in the world. This would have been like, oh my God, Apple's doing all this cool stuff.
Right. And we will get that in iOS 11.3.
Yeah, we'll get some of that. I don't think they're letting us know whether or not a device is in warranty. And I don't think they're letting you know exactly how much it'll cost.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we will get most of that in iOS 11.3. We can start testing that in February, because that's when it'll be added into developer beta, mm-hmm. and just see how it looks. And yeah, and this is something Apple could have done long ago.
Could have and should have.
Yeah. I mean, They do have a feature in iOS right now, and so it's on the iPhone and iPad, where if your battery degrades to the point where it's pretty much unusable, which, by the way, you'll already know because you can't really use the device. If you go digging down into the battery settings, you will find an alert that says your battery's worn out. You need to get it replaced. So there's that, but holy crap.
Right.
What a milquetoast attempt to give users useful information.
Yeah. And it's just so infuriating. I want to be clear here. I am not dinging Apple for the slowdown. The slowdown is brilliant. It's a clever way of extending the life of an iPhone with a degraded battery. Allowing you to continue using the device without having to get a battery replacement.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a huge service that Apple did. It was clever. It was smart. It was convenient. It was useful. It was kind, even.
Yeah. I'm imagining the meeting where people were discussing how to fix the problem, and so they're going around the table and they're having Sorkin style monologues while they discuss the issue, and then someone says, "Hey, why don't we just take those peak processor requests and spread them out over multiple cycles?" And there was silence in the room. And then finally someone's like, "Oh my God, that's brilliant." And then they all ran out of the room and coded it.
One way they could have done it, for instance, would have been, rather than making sure that that these devices were still usable with a degraded battery, instead they could have only given us the notification, "Your device is, you know, shut down because your battery is degraded."
Mm-hmm.
Right. "Your battery's degraded and your device shut down because, you know, it was doing something processor intensive. And this is what happens." That would have been that's probably more than competitors would have done. And that would probably have been met with some grumbling, but, you know, it would have been short lived. And instead, like I said, Apple came up with a solution. They made our devices usable for longer periods of time without having to do anything about the battery if we didn't want to, and they didn't tell us, and it turned what should have been this amazing feature into ridiculous and unnecessary controversy.
Yeah.
And Apple's got what's coming to it for this. It really does.
You know, yeah, and I know I've said it before, but man, if they had just been very clear up front last January when iOS 10.2.1 came out, which was the update,
which is when this feature was mm-hmm. introduced,
they would have taken heat, and people would have been pissed off, and there would have been talk about how Apple is using this as a way to force people to upgrade to new phones, and then it would have died out, and that would have been that. But instead, they're going to have to deal with this, which is just so much more of a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Brian.
Yeah.
One of the things that they're doing with this 11.3 update that adds in all the battery stuff, they're adding in an option for you to disable the feature that keeps your phone from crashing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, I wanted that option, and I was immediately poo-pooed by
probably someone. By me.
It was Dave or you, maybe both of you. Immediately said, "No, that's a terrible idea." I think anytime Apple gives us an option to opt out of some kind of feature that we may want to opt out of, that's great.
And I have to disagree with you on this one, because to me it's like letting people opt out of this feature is akin to letting a five-year-old decide if they want to have the bad tasting medicine that's going to make them healthy. Because they have the choice, but they don't want to take the bad tasting medicine.
But we're not children.
Right. But from an informational standpoint, it's like that, because the people that are saying, oh, we should be able to turn it off, are the people that don't understand why it shouldn't be turned off.
I don't know, man. I think the reality is that some people would probably rather live with the occasional annoying shutdown than they would with a perceptibly slower device.
That's true. And their battery will wear out faster, and they will potentially cause harm.
Okay, that's fine. Let them make the choice.
I just have a really hard time with that one.
Shut up. You're not the boss of me, man.
I know I'm not. Nonetheless, I'm totally comfortable telling you you're wrong this time.
Yeah, I disagree. Listeners, what do you think? Let us know. Facebook.com/groups/context machine.
There you go. Yeah, let us know what you think. Let me know how wrong Brian is. And no, I'm not trying to sway anyone's opinion at all. Yeah. What was that link again?
Facebook.com/group/context machine. I'm multitasking poorly.
Oh, I know. I knew you were multitasking. And while I could have totally covered for you, I just,
Yeah. You're kind of a jerk like that.
I kind of am.
Yeah. It's like you're me today. What's up?
I'm just practicing. Because, you know, what if there's a day where something happens and I just have to be you for the day?
All right, fair enough.
I need to know. I have to have this.
Boy, man, that'd be speaking of movies I haven't seen, that'd be a great movie. It's like Brian and Jeff change bodies for a day.
That would be an amazing movie. All I can imagine is at the end of the day when we switch back to our bodies, You look me in the eyes and say, seriously, this is how you live? And see, now he's being really quiet, acting like I was multitasking. How'd that work? Uh-huh.
I'm still multitasking.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well.
Right. Okay, so there we have it. Apple's going to get is going to face problems. DOJ and the SEC are going to they're going to find that Apple did wrong.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Yeah, my feeling is they started this formal investigation because they are intent on I'm doing air quotes punishing Apple for the way they handled the battery thing. And the irony is, in the end, Apple is going to get punished for doing something good for customers.
Yeah. Well, because they did it wrong, though.
Yeah. Well, okay. Nonetheless.
Yeah, we'll be clear on that.
All right. So you want to talk about Facebook getting crushed or Mac coprocessors?
Let's talk about George Soros.
Okay.
And we did introduce that as topic two.
No, we didn't. We just rattled them off and have arbitrarily been choosing what order they're in, which coincidentally is the same order we rattled them off. Mostly pedantic.
Mostly pedantic. Right. So we should explain who George Soros is for those who don't know. He's a billionaire. He's a philanthropist, and he is a leading funder of progressive causes, meaning that he donates a lot of money to liberal causes. Mm-hmm. And he is one of the bugaboos of the right. And if you hate George Soros, you can hate George Soros all you want. If you love George Soros, you can love George Soros all you want. What we're talking about today is sort of about politics, because he's talking about the effect of politics on Google and Facebook. But we're talking about this much, much more from a technology and regulatory standpoint, as opposed to a pure political standpoint. And he gave a little speechy speech.
Mm-hmm.
Where he said, Facebook and speech. A speechy speech. Yeah, that's a technical term. Facebook and Google have become, quote, obstacles to innovation, unquote, and are a, quote unquote, menace to society whose, quote, days are numbered, unquote. And he told that to the World Economic Forum in Davos on Thursday. That's the same economic meeting that President Trump went to earlier in the week.
Right.
And so he said this last Thursday.
Okay. So last
week. Yeah, it was last Thursday. Yeah, it was last week, I think, that Trump went to Davos.
And the public menace part, it just, this will give people a little bit of insight potentially into how my brain works. I just picture Facebook and Google as people. And they're in a 1920s car with their Tommy guns, zipping down the street, hanging out the windows, firing bullets, public menace. Yeah. Anyhow, so he says they're a public menace. He says that they're a serious problem, and that eventually they are going to get crushed. And I
by regulatory agencies and taxation.
Okay,
and that's how he says they're going to get crushed. He's not saying that that their days are numbered from the standpoint of another competitor coming in and crushing them, but rather saying that governments are going to choose to crush them because they're going to have to.
So they will essentially get regulated out of existence, or regulated, yes, into something that
to another form.
Yeah,
like broken up, have the power of you know what markets they can compete in, have a lot of oversight over their actions, etc.
So if that happens, isn't it likely that we'll just see other social networks or social online services crop up to take their place?
You know, it depends. A lot of the advertising hegemony that these two companies have and the monopolies they have in some respected areas could be addressed through regulation. And if done so, then that would theoretically prevent other companies from doing the same thing at the very least. So he said, we'll give a couple of quotes here, and this is all courtesy of The Guardian. Quote, mining and oil companies exploit the physical environment. Social media companies exploit the social environment. This is particularly nefarious because social media companies influence how people think and behave without them even being aware of it. This is far-reaching adverse consequences on the functioning of democracy, particularly on the integrity of elections. He said that in addition to skewing democracy, social media companies, quote, deceive their users by manipulating their attention and directing it towards their own commercial purposes, deliberately engineering addiction to the services they provide, which he said can be very harmful, particularly for adolescents, all of which I personally agree with. And then he said that the power to shape people's attention is increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few companies. It takes a real effort to assert and defend what John Stuart Mill called the freedom of mind, quote unquote. There is possibility that once lost, people who grow up in the digital age will have difficulty in regaining it. This may have far-reaching political consequences.
You know, the political aspect of this, I find very interesting because, if you look at the last U.S. presidential election, there's a lot of talk about how Facebook was used as a tool to help sway people's perspective of various candidates.
Well, yeah, and put it a little more directly, how Facebook's platform was used to spew propaganda. mm-hmm. made possible by the fact that that Facebook's platform is largely automated, and Facebook has developed a platform to allow precision targeting of very, very tiny demographics, so that you can send targeted messages to those demographics in order to, in this case, to sway their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so if governments are getting more involved in how these social networks operate, does that not potentially raise a concern that governments will take a more active role in what type of content can be shown on the networks?
Yeah, that's possible. There are so many different ways that this could be done. I mean, like, you know, these companies could be ordered broken up. Now, like the European Union, for instance, which is far more likely to do something about all this stuff than American regulators, mm-hmm. especially with the current administration. But actually, you know, I say that, and I mean, the previous administration, which is a Democratic administration, did very, very little to bust monopolies. To wit, they went after Apple instead of Amazon.
Oh, yep, that's true.
In the iBooks industry. So, you know, I mean, that's just still boggles my mind. They could, but European regulators could break up Facebook or Google or both in Europe, could force them to split into multiple companies in those markets. That is conceivable. They can't, obviously they can't affect their U.S. structure. Mm-hmm. But they could affect their European structure. You know, China could do, of course, you know, I don't think Facebook or Google are in China. Google is definitely not in China. I don't believe Facebook is either. Facebook wants to be, but is not.
Well, but for now, that's one headache they don't have.
These companies could be broken up. These companies could be forced to change the way they provide services. They could be forced to be more transparent. They could be prohibited from operating in particular areas. I mean, there's a lot of different things they could do. And quite frankly, like in the case of Facebook, I hate Facebook. And we're sitting there telling people to go to Facebook. And like, I like Facebook from the standpoint of being able to have something like a group, like our Context Machine group. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. It's great. It's fantastic. But what I don't like about Facebook is how hard they make it for us to keep our privacy. And mm-hmm. and I don't like their interface choices. What I don't like is how they manipulate what is in our feed. And like
that really bothers me.
Do you remember how they were doing some A/B testing?
Yes, where they're putting positive things in some people's feeds and negative things in other people's.
To see what they did.
Yeah.
Just to see what they did. And they didn't tell anyone. No, you didn't have the chance to opt into psychological testing. You were just tested. You were experimented on. By you, I mean we.
Which is
really creepy. So like I said, there are some amazing aspects of Facebook. Just like there are some amazing aspects of Amazon, and I get cranky with them too. And but it's like I think at the core of my frustration with Facebook is that Mark Zuckerberg never learned the difference between what he could do and what he should do. Can you experiment? Can you perform psychological experiments on your users? Yeah, apparently. Should you?
No.
Crap, no, you shouldn't. And I just barely saved you an edit there.
And I appreciate that a lot. Especially after the way I was giving you a hard time earlier.
And that's just one example, and it's just one known example. The fact is that Facebook manipulates our news feeds to be addictive, exactly like Mr. Soros accused them of.
Yes.
And I hate that. I hate that.
yeah, it's a problem. And I don't like feeling manipulated by the social networks that I use. And yet I continue to use these social networks.
Yeah, you know, I do too. I do too. I thoroughly enjoy having our Facebook group for the show. I thoroughly enjoy having a page for the Mac Observer.
Yep.
I will thoroughly enjoy setting up an author page when my book eventually gets sold.
Mm-hmm. And, right. I will enjoy subscribing to or joining that page and getting to stay on top of what's going on with your book.
Thank you. That's not what I meant.
I know
and none of these things that we're talking about even touch on the ability for Facebook to be misused and mistreated mistreated. I don't like the way of putting it, but used for the purposes of spreading propaganda. Now, in the 2016 elections,
I think it was exploited.
What did I say?
Mistreated.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Exploited. So in the 2016 election, for instance, in the run up to the election, it was the Russians trying to influence the elections, but it was also the Russians trying to get Americans pitted against each other. Right. It wasn't just electoral misinformation. There was I don't think this actually happened over Facebook. I think this happened over Twitter. But there was in May of 2016, their Russian troll farm set up a protest in Houston, Texas. And then the same Russian troll farm set up a counter protest.
And so
for the purposes of having Americans, you know, arguing and fighting against Americans. Their point has been to destabilize our country and our democracy because Putin believes that somehow makes Russia stronger. Right? These things are absolutely horrible. And they're the amount of misinformation that has spewed across Facebook's news feeds, dealing with politics and slandering groups on the left and right is absolutely staggering. And this is a bad thing. It is bad for democracy. It is bad for society. It is bad for us as human beings. And then you've got the addictive aspect. Then you've got potentially negative effects of the addictive mechanisms that they have on adolescents.
All right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So if the governments around the world are regulating Facebook, we'll just stick with Facebook for right now, but any social network, what does that mean? Does that mean there's a minimum age before you can sign up to use the services? Does it mean that the services need to clock how much time we spend and then lock us out of our accounts if we've exceeded?
You know, how about this? How about they stop focusing on making their products addictive? How about they just do that? Right? That's one of those things that's the difference between what you can do and what you should do. Yeah. Do I realize that it makes them more money? Yes. Do we maybe need to stop obsessing over making more money all the time?
Yeah. And
I realize that's complicated. I realize that I just like, you know, laid out something that is, you know, just not, I mean, it's almost cartoonish in its simplicity and therefore it's nonsense.
But okay. So then let's go with let's make these services or stop making services addictive. What is
stop
that
making
mean?
Them stop. Okay. Okay. You remember how, cigarette companies, I say this as if they no longer do it, LOL, but they were researching how to deliver nicotine through cigarettes in a way that maximized addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about not doing that?
Okay, so with cigarettes, that's something that's quantifiable. You can go into a lab, you can analyze the chemical makeup of the cigarettes and look at the elements and say, oh, wow, okay, if you put these together.
But my point is that the cigarette companies were looking for ways to make their product more addictive.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, well, Facebook is doing the same thing. Facebook could stop doing that.
What did they do to stop doing that? And
well, when you're researching the way content is delivered from the standpoint of making it more addictive, that's the problem. Stop researching how to deliver content to make it addictive. Instead, research how to offer content in a way that's actually useful to your users. Make that be the titular angle of what you're doing, instead of the titular angle being to make it more addictive. So that's what I'm wanting them to stop.
So if you're making the content more useful to the users, which would make it more compelling, I'm assuming. Could not that also be construed as a way to make it more addictive? But, playing devil's advocate.
This is absolutely the case. This is absolutely the case. But in my opinion, this is the difference between what is reasonable for a corporation to do and what is not reasonable for a corporation to do. Because yes, of course, if Facebook becomes more useful, we're going to use it more. But there is a difference between trying to build features that trigger addictive behavior and instead trying to build figures that people will find useful. There is a massive difference, a massive psychological difference between the two.
And I totally agree. And it's going to be fascinating to see how government agencies quantify that.
Well, yeah, they can't. They can't. Instead, what they can do is they can, you know, break up the company and
in the case of Facebook, what happens when that gets broken up? Because now you have Facebook, you have Instagram as a separate company again.
Yeah, you could, like, or you could have what I would imagine they do is perhaps separate Facebook's web advertising business from the rest of the Facebook platform.
So then Facebook has to become a client, a customer of its web advertising business?
Well, or no, Facebook could be prohibited from using Facebook content to advertise on third-party sites and from also gathering information about users through third-party websites to add to their profiles that Facebook compiles on all of us.
Which is just...
That's something that could be regulatorily enforced.
And it's horribly insidious. Just what they're doing, not prohibiting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that any of these answers are easy, and I'm not even saying... I mean, George Soros may... first of all, George Soros may well have his own angle here. He is a billionaire because he's been ruthless in business.
Maybe he's getting ready to start SorosNet, and it's going to be the ultimate social network.
That's kind of funny.
With a layout that's so compelling, you just can't help but keep coming back for more content. But it's not addictive, Brian. It's just compelling.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I'm not optimistic about how this whole thing's going to play out.
I'm not either, but what we've seen in the last few years and we've been focusing most on Facebook here. There was a lot of Russian manipulation of content through Google as well. I don't see Google as being as much of a problem in terms of misinformation as Facebook was. And Facebook is trying to deal with it. I'm not too optimistic about the changes that Facebook has announced recently. Essentially crowdsourcing. You know, it's like, man, like Facebook is like, they don't want to have humans do anything unless it's like the user base doing everything. Mm-hmm. Those humans. Right. So what they've done is they're basically going to make it possible for Facebook's vast user base to sort of self-curate what is considered legit news and what isn't. And I think that that's actually part of how we got here in the first place. So I'm not really sure how that's going to, I'm not very sure about that.
Yeah. Letting users curate the content in that way just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, they're not curating the content as such. They're actually curating new sources.
Yeah, well, that's
what so, and what that would do is that would, reasonably speaking, prevent something that looks legit but is not from being used as a platform, like, you know, like a website, like a blog that's set up by a disinformation for a different disinformation campaign.
Right, and then
right.
And then you'll get a bunch of people that are part of an opposing organization that start a campaign to get that group discredited or that news outlet discredited.
Yeah, it seems potentially rife with opportunities. I mean, Facebook has a lot of very, very smart people here, and to Zuckerberg's credit, I've never met him. I could be wrong here, but I think he understands the breadth of the problem and the negative effect that his company has had on society, at least in terms of political misinformation manipulation. And I think so. That they are looking for a solution to that. Could be wrong though.
I hope they are, and I hope they find a good solution. Yeah.
Well, and that's where I get pessimistic, because Mr. Zuckerberg, you know, it's when you had like wunderkind like young Steve Jobs and young Steve Wozniak, mm-hmm. with coming up with this big tech company that had a big effect on everybody, it was a lot different than these social media platforms. They don't have the same kind of effect on society. They don't control, you know, Apple today, you know, Apple is not in social media with the, can we call anything like iMessage is turning into a little bit more of a social media platform.
Sure. And Apple's previous social media efforts have fallen flat.
You know, but iMessage is still not a platform for distributing content.
No.
iMessage is not a social media designed to allow us to communicate with each other, not to distribute content, which is what Google and Facebook do. And right. Twitter.
And Twitter.
And Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And WhatsApp. And
well, WhatsApp is I would put it more in the iMessage or messages camp, because you can distribute content, but it's more about the conversations.
Yeah. Okay. I'll accept that.
It's more of a chat app.
Is that owned by Facebook too? Isn't it?
Yes.
I honestly keep it hard.
I'm pretty sure WhatsApp is part of Facebook.
Right. So, but the point is that Apple isn't distributing content. Well, there's Apple News, but again, their Apple is curated.
But that's not social.
It's not social.
Yeah. Apple doesn't really have a social platform right now.
Apple doesn't have the same, has not heretofore had the same kinds of negative effects on society, except for where their devices are being used by, of course, people who are actually consuming some of the same content that we've called problematic.
Sure, but that's not the same thing at all, because if they're not on an iPhone, they're on a Galaxy phone or whatever. It's So in this case, it's just the tool to get to the addictive social network.
And Apple's iOS devices have been criticized as being addictive in and of themselves, which touches on one element of what George Soros said, although George did not, Mr. Soros did not name Apple in his diatribe.
Yeah. Do you think that devices like the iPhone, or the iPhone specifically, would be considered an addictive product if it were not for these social networks that people are compelled to check?
Well, here's the thing. I think that Apple has done exactly what I was saying that Facebook should do. Apple hasn't designed iOS to be addictive. Apple has designed iOS to be useful. And many people find that addictive. And more importantly, though, I think a lot of the addictive things that people talk about when they're talking about iOS are actually notifications from social networks. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get your likes, got to get your views, got to get your likes, got to get your views. That sort of thing. And that's essentially tagging. That's using iPhone as a delivery vehicle as opposed to it being part and parcel of iPhone itself.
Sure. And yeah.
So yep. So my original point is when in the past when we've had Wunderkind come up with these tech giants, they haven't had the same kind of chokehold on society like the social media networks have, and which plays back into me complaining about Mark Zuckerberg not having learned the difference between what he should do and what he could do. I mean, he was young when he became this super mega wealthy tech icon, and you know, the company is largely run by young people, and they apparently don't have the wisdom to make some of these decisions, in my opinion.
Yeah. And so now we are looking at people saying, well, it's time to start regulating. We need to have government involvement in these social networks. And yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want government regulation here. I don't want the SEC and the DOJ to smack Apple. Going back to our first talk, that's not my deal here. Mm-hmm. My deal here is it's going to happen to Apple, and it could well happen to Facebook and or Google for completely different reasons,
which is kind of crazy. Hey, at least in Facebook's defense, they're not selling flamethrowers.
What the heck is Elon Musk thinking?
I don't know, but it's a pretty cool looking flamethrower.
It's a super cool looking flamethrower. My question is,
do we need another flamethrower?
Do we need flamethrowers on the market?
I have found a lot of.
We need $500. I guess there are cheaper flamethrowers out
there. Yeah, there's definitely cheaper flamethrowers out there, and yeah. If you live and work on a ranch, you probably need a flamethrower.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, I've seen a lot of footage of Elon Musk on his, out on his back 40. No, that's right. No, I haven't. No.
And for those of you that are thinking, I totally need one of these because of zombie apocalypse. No, if you get one, and the zombies attack, and you hit them with your flamethrower, and you light them up. Now you have burning zombies eating your brains.
It depends on how fast they burn.
I don't think they're going to burn that fast.
I don't know, man.
I think that they could still do a lot of damage to you
before, you know, if, they've
burned to the point where there's nothing.
You see, most zombie movies show like desiccated and thin, right? Zombies sometimes even close to skeletal. Mm-hmm. In reality, America's fat.
Yeah,
so I'm fat.
There's going to be a flamethrower to me. Burn.
Yeah, you sort of take a flamethrower to me. I'm going to go out like a torch.
Right, but you're not going to burn so hot. Neither of us will burn so hot that our bones are gone. So, will our skeletal remains carry on as zombies?
No, but you still got to have the muscle still has to move. There has to be some kind of mechanism to move a zombie unless they're magic.
Well, to be fair, there has to be some level of magic in this.
No. There could be biology we don't understand. It could absolutely be biology we don't understand. There could be chemistry we don't understand. Yeah. But you like a you know, a bunch of bones lying there can't move themselves. Like I say this is a, you know.
The great thing is we're having this as a serious conversation right now.
Yeah, totally. All right, listen, we are sort of running out of time, so let's talk about.
Yeah, we have 10 minutes left.
Let's talk about these here Macs. Like Apple's supposed to be working on like three new Macs that we know of that are going to have Apple coprocessors in them. Mm-hmm. So there could be other new Macs coming too.
Right. It's just the three we know of. Apple has not confirmed this directly, but reliable sources talking to reliable news outlets have confirmed this or have said this.
And the thing that I hone in there is like is the fact that there's supposed to be two. So okay, these are coprocessors. They're probably going on Pro devices, right? And two of them are supposed to be laptops, and one of them is supposed to be a desktop. Now, we can assume that the desktop is at least the Mac Pro.
Sure. Assuming it's coming this year, because that was part of the report that we're getting these computers this year.
Right. And the other two are supposed to be laptops. And here's what I find exciting about that.
Okay.
If true, it means that we're going to get another yearly rev of this will be the third yearly rev in 1 year and 9 months. Let's assume it's not going to come until WWDC.
Okay. And I'm assuming that it could be even later, but
it could be, okay. It could be later. Still, fair enough.
This would still be three and 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime this year would be good. Anytime in 12 months is even better. And anything less than 12 months is delicious.
All right.
Right. So, it's what we want. It's what we want from Apple. It's like we want timely updates on our Macs so that we want to buy them. So that they do more and have the newest technology. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing we didn't get from Apple for, you know, somewhere between 18 and 24 months.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so when Apple finally announced new MacBook Pros with the Touch Bar, we're like, mm-hmm. Hey, this is great. Let's see if Apple can continue it. 9 months later, Apple does it again. New MacBooks. Like we haven't had back to back updates on the MacBook Pro line in, you know, years. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, is this still could be an aberration, right? You know, this we don't know that Apple's back to, you know, the new normal. This could be the aberration as opposed to 2015 and 2016 being the aberration. But now turns out that Apple is working on a couple of more laptops, and that would mean that we have yet more evidence that Apple really gets it and understands that they've got to put out a new product.
Right. And that would be great. That would go a long way towards easing concerns that many people have about the future of the Mac.
Yes, it would. And so that was the thing that I honed in on.
All right. So the thing that I honed in on was the knee jerk reaction that many people had that this is proof that Apple's getting ready to migrate away from Intel processors and use their own custom processor for the core of the computer. And to that, I'm going to borrow a phrase from you, Brian, balderdash.
Well, I'm going to tweak that a little bit. Okay. It's not necessarily a sign.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Coprocessors, Apple coprocessors do not necessarily mean in any way whatsoever that Apple is working on CPU, desktop class, ARM-based processors.
Correct. And I know there's a lot of people, at least based on what I see on Twitter, that think Apple needs to ditch Intel and just do their own thing. And I think Apple is better served by continuing to develop all these co-processors and let the Intel CPU stay as it is. And then Apple gets the best of both worlds. They have their Intel compatibility, so the apps that people need to run on their Macs continue to run. Good luck trying to get Microsoft or Adobe to retool their core apps for a new Apple processor again. But then,
Adobe is like still hasn't done a good job with the x86 on Mac as it is.
Yeah. So, but then Apple gets the benefit of taking over processes and functions with their own silicon that enhances the overall performance of the computer.
Right. And can do so in a way that it's completely in control of, right? And in a way that the competition can't.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows Apple to differentiate and control at the same time, which are two things that Apple really likes to do.
Right. So I'm all for these custom processors in Mac laptops and desktops. And I'm all for letting Intel stay in the mix as well. I think that's the perfect balance for Apple right now.
Right. Okay. Now, all that said, I was being pedantic with your wording. I was saying that these coprocessors don't necessarily mean that Apple is working on its own desktop CPUs.
Mm-hmm.
But Apple could be doing that. You know, sure. It's possible that Apple would like to move Macs to its, you know, AX line of processors. It's entirely possible, certainly on the consumer end.
Okay,
it's
so possible. So if Apple does that, then what they have to do is to develop an A-series processor that has the horsepower to fully emulate x86 architecture, so that Adobe Creative Suite, Microsoft Office, and all of these other big applications that people rely on all the time continue to work exactly as they should with absolutely no performance or compatibility hit.
You know what Apple could do, though, if they did want to make this kind of move?
Hmm.
They could give Adobe, give AutoCAD $1 billion to port that stuff. Here, make it work. We don't want to hear your whine. How much money do you need?
They could.
I'm not saying that Apple will. I'm not even saying necessarily that Apple should. Actually, I think that Apple should. I think if Apple were to make that kind of change and got any kind of pushback from the most important Mac developers, I think that Apple should use some of that massive cash it's got to make it happen.
That's a possibility too. When you have enough money, anything is possible.
Yeah.
You could even shoot your own car into space.
Yes. Yes, you can. And he doesn't have all the money.
No, he doesn't. And yet he's going to send a Tesla into space.
Yes.
Space Odyssey.
He should stick the flamethrower in there.
Totally.
Boy, that's going to mess with whoever finds this thing in a million years.
Yeah.
2 million years or 5 million years or.
And they'll look at it and be like, years. Oh my God, can you believe how expired the tags are on this car?
That's funny.
Oh,
thanks. I like that. Yeah. Right. All right. Well, good news there. Don't make too much out of it. And I can't wait to see what kind of new Macs we see this year.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm really excited to see the new Macs, and I'm hoping that the new laptops Apple comes out with make me wish that I could upgrade mine to a new model. And I have the Touch Bar MacBook Pro. So I'm not saying that like I want Apple to entice me. I just want the products to be so good that I look at them and I'm like, oh, I kind of wish mine was that, but I still love my laptop. Yeah. All right. Hey, I think we've hit time.
All right.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at acm@macobserver.com. And I was trying to remember the thing. Facebook.com/groups/Context Machine.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I like that.
And thanks for listening.
Your content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our band was provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.